You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to episode Christian Willannon of the Cost Per Point Cast. I'm your host, Trevor Shackles. Well, folks, we're over halfway through the season already and just under 2 weeks away from the trade deadline, so there are certainly some things to talk about, but far less than in the previous three deadlines for Ottawa. And to discuss trades and much more, I have Brennan Parks with me, aka Everyday Sens. Brennan, how's it going?
It's going good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming on. I know you're just on the Locked On Senators podcast, so you're a bit of a hot commodity right now, but I first just wanted to ask you about you to begin with. Like, what made you start ramping up your coverage over the past year? Because honestly, like, you've been one of the most active and important people on Sens Twitter.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I don't know. I think as time goes on, the Sens are getting more and more exciting, and it's like I have this like overwhelming urge to constantly go on Twitter and analyze things for some reason. You probably feel the same way. It's like every mm-hmm. little thing, there's so much that can be talked about that it's like the content never ends, you know? So it's been fun.
For sure. And now I believe, was it Instagram that you first started?
Yeah. Back in 2017 on Instagram I started, and then recently my account got disabled, so I had to restart, but yeah, it's been good.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I think I first noticed you on Instagram as well. Just, you know, some really cool graphics and stuff like that. And even just on Twitter, I know that the gifts you provide are super valuable to me. And just like when I need to look back on things. Plus, I do find that you're one of the most neutral people on Twitter, which is not easy. So kudos there.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I didn't used to be like that, but Twitter kind of rounded me out a little bit. Got to look at things from both perspectives. So
yeah, exactly. No, I like that. We kind of need people like that. So do you have an end goal in mind with all of this, with the Everyday Sens and your website and all that? Or are you just kind of going with the flow right now?
I'm kind of going with the flow for now. I mean, like the website's had a good foundation too with memberships and stuff. So that's provided me with a little bit more than just free stuff and everything, which is good. I'd like to take the design that I do and everything and turn it into some sort of profession or find a profession in that and a job. But mm-hmm. right now I'm kind of going with the flow and seeing where it takes me. Just enjoying it.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I think Senators fans certainly appreciate it. And I feel like just specifically this past year too, there's just been an explosion of, you know, content creators, whether that's bloggers or podcasters or you've been sort of doing all of that. So yeah, I think we're super lucky to have people like you, and certainly keep up all the great work with that. And yeah, I think we're just super lucky.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And right back at you too. You're one of those people, so don't be too humble.
Thank you, Brendan. Yeah. But it's true. Definitely a lot of good people to follow out there. And I'll give you a chance at the end of the show to kind of plug everything you want, because there's certainly some things that I'm sure you want people to know where they can find you. But getting into the team now, one of the most fascinating stories this year has been the goaltending for me. And, you know, with Matt Murray, Marcus Hogberg, and now Joey Decord hurt, they've had to play five different goalies. What are your overall thoughts on the goaltending at the NHL level, and who do you think they'll have to end up protecting in the expansion draft?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been completely torn on this. I've thought about it a lot since Murray went down, especially because, you know, Decord and Gustafson come in and they're so good. Now Forsberg comes in too. I mean, I'm not too worried about him, but mm-hmm. it's definitely a fascinating position. And I never played it, so I can't go too crazy with, like, what goes into it. But the expansion draft's going to be tough because I don't think there's a wrong answer right now between Gustafson and Decord. I think the wrong answer is protecting Murray.
Yeah.
And I have this small fear that they will do that, which I don't want to have, but I do. And I mean, if Seattle takes Murray in that contract, we can thank them. Like, we don't need to be protecting him. That shouldn't even be in Pierre Dorion's head or anybody's, you know, thought process. I think it's down to Gustafson and Decord. And I'm interested to hear what you're leaning towards on that. I'm leaning towards Gustafsson right now, even though I love Joey. I think he's fantastic. I think he's the more like solid option. I think he's more confirmed to be like a projected starting goaltender in my mind. And Gustafsson's more of a risk, but he's also 2 years younger. And I think age is so valuable with goalies. And and like, I don't know, I see more star potential there. It's more of a risk, but I see a higher ceiling, if you know what I mean.
I think I'm pretty much on the same track as you. I think that the only thing that worries me with Murray is that, you know, Dorion is the one that signed him to this contract. So, like, I worry it would be like some sort of pride thing where, you know, he thinks he's worth the contract and will want to protect him. Also, at the same time, like, how bad is it going to look for, you know, like Eugene Melnyk looking at this saying, okay, you gave this goalie, you know, what was it, 26 million or something like that, and then you're just going to not protect him in the expansion draft, like, you know, not really spending his money very wisely. So I think you're right also with the Gustafsson Decord thing. I think Gustafsson kind of has the lower floor but probably the higher ceiling. And, you know, the injury to Decord, obviously it's not great. Like, we would have liked to see him play, but there's some silver lining to that in the sense that maybe Seattle is less likely to take him because, you know, he only played a few games this season. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's definitely true. I mean, his stats also aren't great this season, even though I think he's been really good. You know, he's got, what, a .897 save percentage or something. So, you know, they look at that and it's like very small sample size, 24 years old. I don't know that they're going to be overly interested. I know there's a plethora of names out there from other teams too. So I'm not too worried about it in that sense, but I think that injury definitely does play a role in their decision.
For sure, yeah. So I think as long as they take one of Gustafsson or Decord, I think that, you know, should be okay. If you had to pick right now who you think they will actually protect, what's your gut feeling right now?
Oof. It's hard to differentiate between who I think they'll do and who I want them to do.
Yeah.
I honestly think they would protect Decord right now. I think you're right with the Murray thing. It's a pride thing. And you also have to think, like, if you don't protect him from his standpoint, is he really going to feel like I'm the guy for the next, right, what, 3 years? Like, you just basically said they can take me for free, right? So it's like, I don't know how that's going to go over. But at the same time, losing either of those guys, Gustafsson or Decord, it just, like, it hurts me on the inside a little bit. But I think they go with Decord. I think they feel like he has a solid role here and is a big part of the future.
I could certainly see that. Oh, sorry.
Don't hold me to it. But yeah, that's what I'm
for sure. And I mean, I don't think anyone was even really thinking about Gustafsson literally just a couple weeks ago. So these things can change so quickly. And hell, I mean, there's a chance that Seattle doesn't even take a goalie from Ottawa. Like, maybe they want to take Chris Tierney or something.
Oh,
like
I hope
that.
So.
Yeah. So it's, you know, this whole conversation could be moot. But yeah, so moving beyond that, I'm kind of interested because Ottawa just has, you know, other prospects as well. They have Kevin Mandelays, they have Mads Sogard, Levi Marilainen. I don't think I'm missing anyone. But out of those guys, including the five that have played so far, or sorry, well, we're not really including Anton Forsberg, but the four that we're mainly focusing on, which goalie are you most confident in moving forward?
I'm almost going to say Decord. I have a lot of confidence in Decord. I think he's going to be 25 next year. I think he can step into a bigger role. And I hate to say that because of Murray's contract. Like, I do think Murray's going to bounce back and find confidence. But at the same time, like, his entire career has never been based on consistency. You know, he's always been an inconsistent goaltender that's very streaky. And that doesn't instill confidence in me necessarily. Yeah. Like, I feel more comfortable with a guy like Decord that'll come in and give you a chance to win. And, like, you know, he's such a competitor. So I do think Murray will hold the starting role and will be that guy for a little while. But I do see him being overtaken at some point in the next few years for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree there. And I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with Hoberg too, because he's an RFA this summer. Like, I could just imagine them either, like, non-tendering him or, you know, trading him for some random prospect or something, just because, you know, if they want to see Decord take over that second role behind Murray, or maybe even the first spot, you know, I could certainly see them moving on from Hoberg. So, you know, the fact that they at least have so many bodies Whether any of them will turn out to be good is another story, but the fact that they have so many options is at least interesting, and you know, it's not as if there's no depth there whatsoever, at least.
Yeah, like they have so many good goalie prospects, like you said. It's like, that's why moving on from Hogberg, for example, too, wouldn't be the worst thing. It's like, mm-hmm. it's not that big of a loss, and he's been completely brutal this season until the last two games before his injury. So I don't think fans would be too heart-wrenched about that. And they do have a lot of depth, and so that allows them to kind of be okay with losing Gustafsson or Decord. But at the same time, it's like, you think back to what we lost: Bishop, Driedger, and Leonard before, and it's like, you don't want to lose a guy like Gustafsson or Decord and have them go turn into a starter for Seattle for years to come and just a world wrecker, and you're feeling bad yet again, right? So it's a big decision. Hopefully they don't take either. Like I will gladly hand over Chris Tierney if that's what they would prefer, but but I don't know, all we can really do is hope right now, I guess. I mean, they could also go the trade route of protecting them. I don't think they'll do that.
Yeah,
but they could like offer an asset. I actually got some stats. There was 10 trades in the 2017 expansion draft, like in regards to protecting players.
Holy.
Or getting,
wow.
Yeah, for Vegas. So there was like Alex Tuch got traded as a prospect from Minnesota to Vegas in order for them to not take Dumba or Scandella at the time. Mm-hmm. And so at the time, Tuch was considered to be like a top prospect. So it's just a similar situation. Shea Theodore was in the same boat. So they could also go that route of trying to protect both of their goaltenders. I don't think they will because of the depth, but it's an option. I mean, like, is a third-round pick more valuable than Decord, for example? It's tough.
Right, yeah. And I think, you know, most of those trades worked out extremely well for Vegas. So, you know, they got to be really careful to not give up, you know, who knows what they would have to give up, like, you know, Formanton or Abramov or something that. Like, I don't think that would be worth it. Just to give, you know, two players away for free. But it's going to be fascinating. And I mean, we're going to be talking about this all the way until, when is the draft? In July, I guess, or end of June or something. So it'll be lots of fun. But I wanted to talk about the Christian Willanen deal. And, you know, I said this on Twitter. It's ironic that this episode is the Christian Willanen episode because it's the 86th episode. Because, yeah, obviously he was dealt yesterday to the LA Kings for Michael Amadio. And that was after he had already cleared waivers. So, like, we knew the writing was on the wall there. What do you make of Willanen's tenure in Ottawa?
Yeah, I liked it. I think it's a bit preemptive to move on so fast. Like, 58 career games, 18 games in the last two seasons because of that torn labrum last year. It's like Bruce Gerriak said on Twitter, he's not a prospect, and a lot of people think he is. But at the same time, like, he's super new to the league, right? Like, 58 career games, that's not even a full season. It's not even that close to a full season. And so it's like, when do rookies ever come in and just dominate the league, right? Especially out of college. So, you know, I don't know, 58 games, 18 games the last two seasons, it's hard to move on from that fast. But at the same time, he is 26, and he didn't show a whole lot. Like, I'm not too concerned he's going to go to LA and, like, break out. I mean, I hope he does for him. I like him as a person. But I'm not too concerned he's going to go be, like, the next Erik Karlsson or anything, you know? Like, I think it's fine to move on from at this point. And I like Amadio.
For sure, yeah. And I guess, yeah, we can get into Amadio in a second, too. And then just with Willanen, you're right. Like, it certainly wasn't a massive sample size. And I think in his previous 40 games in 17-18 and 18-19, you know, he was really solid. I would say he was, you know, probably only Chabot and DeMello were better than him during that time. And I think he certainly is capable of more. I think, as you said, though, only those 18 games, you know, having the injury and then having COVID affect him, not that he got COVID, but just the time off. I think, like, it's so hard to just come back into the league and expect to be, you know, a good second pairing guy. So I think just his, I believe it was 15 games played this year. It's not enough. And I think, as you said, I wouldn't expect him to be a star in LA. And, like, there's a realistic scenario where he's just out of the league next year or the year after that. But I do think the talent is there. And if he's able to overcome this injury, like, I see some similarities with, you know, Colin White was really not great last year after, you know, coming back from his injury. And, you know, there's a chance that Willanen does bounce back. But again, I don't think it's the end of the world. Like all of these moves where we've lost, you know, Balcers, and I'm assuming we'll probably lose Logan Brown eventually. Like, you know, not the end of the world. It just kind of sucks because I was pretty high on him. But yeah, do you have any thoughts on Amadio coming into Ottawa?
I like him. I mean, at least for Will Lennon, we got something, right? Like, if we would have just lost him on waivers, that would have stung a little bit, too, because that's Balser's traffic. Yarrow, did we lose? We lost Yarrow's, too. And Will Lennon for, like, next to nothing, right? And so that would have sucked. But I like him, Audio. I think, like, last season, it's important to note, so he's got 168 career games played. So he's a little bit more solidified. 2014 third-round pick. Last season, though, he served a full-time role for LA. Like, he was in 68 games. He registered career highs in games played, assists, points. His Corsi and expected goals for were both above 54%, which is solid for 68 games. You know, I mean, it's a fourth-line role, but can't ask for much more. and he lost that role this year, but I did like from what I saw of him last year, I liked his game. And if nothing else, he'll come in, he'll be really good for Belleville, who is struggling offensively this year. I've watched their games, and man, they don't have a lot up front, aside from a couple of guys. Mm-hmm. So, like, I listened to one of the Kings analysts talk about him yesterday, and they said that he was an elite AHL guy that just couldn't transfer it to the NHL at this point. And sometimes that insinuates that he'd benefit from a change of scenery. So we'll see there. But if not, then, you know, if he's an elite AHL guy, then all for it. Like, get Belleville some improvements, and why not?
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
For sure. I mean, you kind of need those guys. Like, Belleville had Jordan Schwartz, I think, was it last year? I believe. Like, there's just, they need, you know, they had, like, Paul Carey a few seasons ago. Like, you just kind of need those AHL veterans. And, you know, he is a year younger than Will Lennon as well. So it's not as if he's, you know, some guy over 30 years old. You know, probably an inconsequential trade at the end of the day. But as you said, Belleville certainly hasn't been good this year. And actually, I should have looked this up before, but do you know, is he like an RFA at the end of the year?
Yeah, I think he's an RFA at the end of the year, and Will Lennon could be either at the end of the year.
Right, right. So, I mean, I would assume hopefully they can keep Amadio, just mainly for some Belleville depth. But yeah, no, I'm curious to hear what you think about the whole situation. Like, what would you have done differently over the past few months with Will Lennon, if anything?
Yeah. I said it on the Locked On Sens podcast, actually, as one of my moves about what DJ Smith should do for the rest of the season. I said they should just keep playing him. Like, I wouldn't have even traded him. I would have just kept playing him and given him an extended look. Because, like, 15 games this season, I mean, yeah, he wasn't great. Like, he was fine, but he wasn't what they wanted, clearly. But, I mean, 15 games, and he was, like, in and out, too, right? It's hard to find a rhythm when you're constantly going in and out. Same with Brännström. And so I would have given him an extended look. I would have let him finish the season and gone from there. If you don't like him at the end of the season and he's really struggling through, and over the last few months too, I would have played him for most of the season. Like, he should always be in over Coburn, Gudbranson, Josh Brown, even, like, whatever it is. Just, like, he should always be in the lineup, and I would have played him consistently, let him find that rhythm. And if he's not working out, then at least you know, right? Like, you know that he's not going to go somewhere else and get the chance and be really good. So...
yeah, I'm fully on board with that. I would have loved to see that. I agree that 15 is not really enough, and it is hard to get into that rhythm. So don't really have much more to add to that. I fully agree there. But, you know, I wish him all the best. And, you know, I hope, well, in a selfish way, I hope he isn't, like, amazing in LA, but I hope he's, you know, continues his NHL career and is at least, like, you know, a solid depth guy or something like that. Not burn us too much. So...
that's exactly how I feel too. He seems like a really good guy, so you know, you wish the best for him, but, like, don't be another one of those guys that goes off in LA, you know?
Exactly. So now, a game for the ages was played on Saturday night, and that was the NCAA game between University of North Dakota and Minnesota Duluth, which ended in the fifth overtime with UND getting eliminated. So, I mean, this might be dated by tomorrow or Thursday, but Shane Pinto, Jacob Bernard-Docker, and Jake Sanderson, and I guess even Tyler Cleven, could potentially sign with the Senators. What do you think they do here, and what would you do?
Yeah, I think JVD signs for sure. From everything I've heard, I think it was Simmer that said Pinto was waiting a little bit or something. I'm not sure. I think he'll sign too. Like, I think Pinto's ready to come in, and he could be really good in Belleville, for Belleville and for himself. Bernard Docker, I think, gets a role in Ottawa next year, so I think he signs this year and plays for Belleville too, and is a big addition there. Sanderson's the interesting one to me because, like, I think Sanderson's ready, but I think he wants to go back to school for another year from all the signs that are pointing in that direction. And I think that could benefit him too. Like, you look at Kale McCarr, who he was probably ready to come to Colorado after his first year with UMass, but he went back and he was the captain and he destroyed the league. And then he came in and he won the Calder last year, I'm pretty sure, right? So Sanderson might do that too, and that'd be fine. I do think that JVD and Pinto come over though and are big, big roles for Belleville. What about you?
Yeah, no, I think that's probably likely. You know, we saw Colin White initially came over with the Belleville tryout. I think he only played a few games and then ended up signing. I think a lot of people were talking about the fact that if they are able to delay Pinto and Bernard Docker's ELCs till next year, then they will be they won't line up with Stützle as an RFA. And I mean, that's, I don't know how much that'll actually matter, but you know, you sort of have to think about these things. So I'd love to see JBD and Pinto play some games this season, but you know, we might have to settle just for Belleville, which I'd be fine with. And like, yeah, were you able to watch any of the overtime of that game?
Yeah, I saw from the second overtime to the fifth. I thought the game would be over, and I looked, and I'm like, how is this not bad? It went from 7:30 until, like, 2.
Yeah, insane. But, I mean, Sanderson, though, was just, it literally looked like he was never tired.
That was nuts. Like, he was going out in the fifth overtime and just zooming by everybody. Like, that's what I'm talking about. That's why I said, like, will he eventually overtake Shabbat? Like, 5 overtimes and this guy is still not tired. Like, God.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, I could envision a scenario where he sort of takes over that role of, like, being the horse on the team, where he's, you know, DJ Smith just, you know, plays him 30 minutes in really important games and stuff like that. And then I think that would be so good for Shabbat to, you know, not be the guy in terms of, like, he can be the guy offensively, but then you can just sort of let Sanderson be that two-way guy that can kind of do everything. But yeah, like, honestly, it's, I'm just very eager to watch all these guys, and I don't know how much we will see them this year, but I think for next season, we'll certainly, I'd be shocked if Pinto and Bernard Docker didn't spend, like, at least a good chunk of next season in Ottawa. And, you know, obviously, if Bernard Docker doesn't sign in the next, you know, what, few weeks, I guess, then that's pretty worrisome because then he could just leave as a UFA the following summer. But I'd be shocked if that happened.
Yeah, I think he'll definitely sign. Pinto, too, could start next season in Belleville, play, like, half the season and then take over. Like, I could envision Chris Tierney being traded at next season's deadline and then Pinto takes his spot, for example. Like,
I think that'd be ideal.
There's a bunch of ways. Yeah, I think JBD starts in Ottawa, though. Like, I think he's ready. He spent, what, 3 seasons at UND, so I think that extra year gives him the tools he needs. Like, he's ready to go. He should be a big addition, too.
Yeah, and, I mean, just how desperately they need a solid defensive right-hand shot back there. Like, they desperately need them. I just hope they don't, you know, have too high expectations and kind of, you know, throw them into the fire, I guess. But, like, what do you think? What kind of impact do you think these three can have right away and also moving forward?
I think JVD comes in, and like with Ottawa next year, he comes in and he starts in like a bottom four role, but eventually, like, even next season, I could see them testing him with Shabbat for sure. Like, I think he like I said, he's ready. Is he 21 now, 22? I think he's ready to take on a bigger role. 21, yeah. So maybe a little bit of like easing him into it, sort of like Formanton is, and then taking on that bigger role. Pinto, like I said, I think starts, I don't know, I don't see him starting with Ottawa next year. I see him starting in Belleville, but I think he'll quickly earn that role. Or, I mean, I said the same thing about Norris and look at him, so I don't know, maybe he does start in Ottawa. I think they could both take on big roles, though, and I think when Sanderson does come over, he'll also take on a fairly big role because he's just such a workhorse, right? Like, he's ready to go at all times, so.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And I can certainly see all three of them being very important players for the team. And you know, I don't want to leave out Clevin as well, but he's certainly like the kind of forgotten guy amongst these four, cause he'll probably last like, I don't know, 3, maybe even 4 seasons at college, just because I feel like there won't be really any room for him in Ottawa for a while. But yeah, it'll be, awesome to get to see these guys in Ottawa soon, and even if it's Belleville, but certainly something to keep an eye on in the next couple weeks as we look to see them sign with Ottawa. Now, the trade deadline is on Monday, April 12th. We're recording this on Tuesday, March 30th, so that's less than 2 weeks away. This year is obviously going to be a lot different than the past 3 years with far fewer trade chips. And we already saw Willanen get moved, but who else do you think Pierre Dorion will move before the deadline?
Yeah, I think it's going to be quieter than a lot of people expect because we seem like big sellers this year, but we don't actually have that many pieces. Like, you look at it and you've got, like, Goodbranson, Coburn, I had somebody else too, but those guys probably won't even get much interest at all, if any, and if they do get anything, just take it, but they're probably not going to. Then your most attractive pieces are, like, DeZingle, I'm blanking on that.
Mike Riley?
I mean, you got DeZingle, yes, DeZingle, Riley, and Tierney, I guess. Like, I've seen talk about Tierney. I don't know that anybody's going to want Tierney's contract, because I think he's due, like, $4.2 million next season. He's backloaded, so that's... I mean, I would still trade him, but I don't know if he's going to get much interest. DeZingle, I've remained adamant that they should keep him. I love him. He's one of my favorite players. It's biased, sure, but I think he's phenomenal. Like, on the ice, he's been exactly what you want from a veteran, right? He's 28, and he seems like he really wants to be in Ottawa, too, so it's tough to move a guy like that, that seems to really add to the culture and is actually effective on the ice. Like, I hate to do this, but comparing him to Dadonov, their performances, it's just crazy, like, the difference. Zingle comes in, he's making so much less in such a small role, and he's still so effective on every shift, and Dadonov's not. But at the same time, like, you can't really move Dadonov. His contract kind of keeps him there, and that's fine. You should keep him. I think they probably do move to Zingle just because of, you know, they need to bring Formanton in next season, and you want to create that space. There are ways to keep him. Like, I think you could move Tierney, put Paul at center, and then you can have Formanton up with DeZingle in the lineup still. Like, there are ways to do it, but I don't know. I don't feel like they should move him for, like, a fourth-round pick. That just doesn't seem valuable to me. I know it's an asset, but I'd be okay with keeping him if that's all you can get, you know? And then and Riley, too. Sorry, you can go.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, let's stick on DeZingle, and then we can get to Riley. Yeah. No, I agree with DeZingle. I think it's very, like, I'd be totally fine with either way. I think I certainly see the value, like you do, with having him on the fourth line. Like, we're actually having an effective fourth line. I do think his scoring will probably go down a bit. He had, what, I think 5 goals in, like, 11 games or something. But, like, he obviously is still a decent player, especially in the bottom six. And you can certainly have a lot worse options out there. So I think... Yeah, if he's willing to sign for, like, 1 or 2 years, I'd be totally for that. But at the same time, like, I don't know, who knows? Maybe a team is going to be willing to give up a second-round pick again for him. And if so, I would be, you know, it'd be hard for me to turn that down. But you're right, like, maybe they're only offering a fourth because his contract is a bit bigger, even though he's a rental. So it's, I know a lot of people have sentimental value, like yourself. And I get why. So it's a tough decision for him.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, if we can get a second round pick, I'm all for it. Like I'll take that all day. You know, that's if we can really, like, credit to Pierre Dorion, if he really just went out and got DeZingle and traded him for another second round pick, like, that would be hilarious. That is, like, yeah, that's awesome. But I don't know. There was a rumor out there that he wouldn't get more than, like, a fourth. And so then it becomes interesting because if you move him for a fourth, and it just feels so, like, I don't know, forced almost. And maybe you have to, but I'd be okay with keeping him too. If he will sign short term, of course.
For sure. Low dollars. Well, I mean, it's interesting to look at the list of pending UFAs that Ottawa has actually re-signed. It's hilariously small. It was like Magnus Pajärvi, Mike Condon, I guess Tom Pyatt. It was like... just, you know, a handful of guys over the past decade, and it, you know, they almost never keep them. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they do move to Zingle. I guess we might as well get to Riley as well. Are you kind of similar with him in terms of, like, wanting to keep him or trade him?
Yeah, I don't feel as attached to Riley, but he has turned his season around. He's been really, really good over the last, like, month. He's been one of our better defenders. Like, I'd say he's been the most reliable defender, maybe other than Zub, I guess. And so I do think they want to keep him next year, especially with moving Willanen, because I think he'd be really good on that bottom pairing if you bring JBD in too. and with Brännström in full time, like that could be a solid decor in one offseason, right? You flip it around, and it's actually a decent decor. That'd be nuts. And I do think they like that. It'll depend on the offers, though. I mean, again, if you can get like a second or third round pick for Mike Riley, you take that. But if not, then it's like, why not keep him? I'm sure he'll sign here short term. Like, he's good.
Yeah, I think the potential offers for him are probably similar to DeZingle, right? Like, I think, you know, based on wins above replacement metrics and, you know, other advanced stats, Riley's actually been, you know, one of the best defensemen in the league this year. It's a very small sample, and I don't think he actually is one of the best defensemen. But I don't think his trade market would reflect that, as you're saying. Like, you know, they'd be lucky to get a second. Maybe it just ends up being a fourth because, you know, Ottawa traded a fifth to get him. And at that time, it was a bit of an overpay because they, you know, he was waived the week before. So, yeah, I'd be fine with them re-signing him too. I do worry, though, because they don't really... I mean, they never had Shabbat, Brännström, and Willanen all in the same lineup because they're all sort of, like, offensive-minded. So I do worry if they'd even want to have, you know, Shabbat, Brännström, and Riley down the left side. You know, they might want someone more defensive-minded. But, yeah, like, he's been solid this year, and, you know, if it's the difference between Riley or another guy like Goodbranson or some sort of veteran like that, like, I'll take Riley every single day.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And yeah. I mean, they can put a more defensive guy back there. Just don't make it Goodbranson. Like, sign somebody that's actually, like, effective on the bottom pairing, you know, and reliable and can clear the net front at least.
Exactly.
That's all I'm saying. I mean, and I think Riley's been better defensively as the season went on. So they might see him as more of a two-way guy, but, yeah, you would probably want more of a checking guy on that third pairing if you can get him. But it might come down to the offers for Riley. Like, yeah.
For sure. And I wanted to briefly touch on, so, you know, those four guys, I would say, like, Riley, DeZingle, Goodbranson, Tierney are probably, like, the most obvious ones. Artem Anisimov was waived. I don't believe... I guess, will news come out tomorrow about if he's claimed or not?
No, he cleared. He cleared today.
He cleared. Okay, I missed that then. So yeah, he, you know, maybe they get like a very late round pick for him or something. One name, and I don't want to talk too much about this because, you know, I feel like his name is talked about all the time, but Logan Brown is probably another potential option as well. Do you think they'd be able to get anything even for him? Or like, do you think they would potentially move him?
That's a tough one. I haven't thought about too much what their plan is for the future. I don't think they're going to end up on the same page. Like, I think they will ultimately move on from him. I think his value is extremely low right now. Like, there's not going to be much interest. Maybe you can flip him for another young struggling player, sort of. Like, that would be my optimal move. Is, I don't, like, off the top of my head, wouldn't be worth it, but like, Mittelstadt has more worth than him, but a guy like that's really struggling that potentially could be flipped. I'd be okay with that. But again, I don't know how much interest he's going to have around the league right now. I'd rather give him a look, to be honest with you. Get him healthy and give him a look. Like, let him show you something. Because moving on from him without getting a look, there's too much of that going on right now. I think you got to give guys a chance before they're going to come back and bite you, you know?
Yeah, it's a recurring theme for sure. And, you know, I certainly want to see him get a look as well. It's so frustrating, though, especially for me, because I feel like, well, I mean, not just me, but like... I feel like I'm sort of one of the Logan Brown defenders of, you know, like saying, okay, give him a chance. And I'm assuming you kind of are too. And, you know, he just keeps getting hurt, right? Like, he would have apparently played with Stützle and Batherson a few weeks ago, and then he gets injured. So he just really needs to stay healthy because, you know, I don't know if this is just like genetics or if this is just bad luck or, you know, he's not working hard enough or something to strengthen his body. I have no idea, but it's frustrating when he, you know, this is probably like the fifth season in a row that he hasn't been able to stay healthy. So yeah, you're right. Maybe they could get, I don't know. The first name that popped into my mind was like Josh Hosang from the Islanders, right? Like he's not even on their taxi squad. He probably has, you know, even lower value and like he might not even ever play in the NHL again, but similarly struggling prospect who hasn't really gotten a chance. But yeah, it'll be like a far less interesting trade deadline. I think one thing to point out too is that Ottawa has six picks in the 2021 draft, which obviously is one less. They do have an extra second rounder. But I think what's fascinating about this draft is that scouts are going to have hardly any information to go off of, like max 30 games for some of these guys, which is a lot less. So I do feel like, you know, if you are able to get a fifth or sixth round pick for a good Branson, like, I feel like your chances of getting an NHL player with that pick are maybe not vastly higher, but definitely higher than in previous years, just because, you know, you don't have as much data to go off of this year.
Yeah, for sure. I think you're definitely right about that. And I think you definitely take whatever you can get for Gabranson, Cover, and even Josh Brown, right? Throw them in there. Mm-hmm. Like, just take what you can get and go with it. I mean, assets are assets, and I'll take picks this year. Like you said, I think it's going to be a kind of a wild draft in that sense. There's so much less data, and that's why they were pushing to extend it too, right? Like, to next year. And now that it's not, it's like, okay, well, thankfully, I mean, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I'm excited for it, though. I think we can end up with some good late round picks again and go from there. So,
for sure, yeah. And okay, so what's the official prediction then? Who's going? Who's getting traded from Ottawa?
All right, I'll go with. I really like. I'm looking at his jersey on the wall, so I have a really hard time coming to terms with it. I'll say Dzingel does get traded. But I could also see him signing, but I think he will be traded. And then I'll say Riley stays. I think they're gonna keep him. And he recently talked about re-signing too. He said, like, I think they're gonna talk to me about re-signing soon. So, I mean, that's something.
Yeah.
And then I'll say Gabranson. I don't even think they're gonna get anything for Gabranson, honestly. He's not even in a role right now. I don't think they're gonna get any offers for him. Maybe a sixth or seventh. I'm gonna say he stays, though. I don't think they get anything for him. And same with Coburn and Josh Brown. They can't even hold a role in the Sens. So how are they gonna hold a role anywhere else? I don't think they will. I think it'll be Dzingel, and that's pretty much it, to be honest with you.
Interesting. Okay. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, I wouldn't expect more than two max. So, yeah, much different than in years past, that's for sure. So the first 15 games of the season for the Senators were obviously a train wreck. Everyone knows that. They went 2-12-1. But since then, they've gone 10-8-3, which isn't amazing, but it's certainly respectable. Where do you think this team stands in the rebuild, and what can we expect from them the rest of the way and then also for next season?
Yeah, it's been a big turnaround. I think it's good to see for the young players too and everything. You look at how Buffalo's doing, and it's like, thank God we are not Buffalo, 18 straight losses. So it's been good, and I think they're going to keep it up too. Like, I don't think it's just some decent stretch. Like, it's not like they've been amazing, right? It's not just some hot streak. They've just, like, rounded their game. They refined their game, the little things, the mechanics of their game, and they're actually competing now. You don't see those crazy blowouts anymore. So I think for the rest of this season, you can expect them to continue like they are. They're not going to be a playoff team or anything. They're not going to make some Hamburglar run or anything. I mean, I hope they do, but it's just simply unrealistic. I think you can expect just a solid showing, pretty much even record, and something to be content with at least, which might not look great for the drafting, but it honestly, it's not a draft that you need first overall in anyways. Like, it's the top 10 are kind of all mixed up for people. And then totally. For next season, I would go, like, I think they should be out of the bottom 10 next season. I'm coming out and saying that because it's been 4 years in the basement, and at a certain point you have to show that there's actually improvement happening. I think if we're in the bottom five again next year, I know the draft is good next year and you want Shane Wright and everything, but, like, if you're in the bottom five again, people are going to start questioning the rebuild, because it was supposed to be 2021 to 2025 that it was unparalleled success. If you're going into, like, 2023 bottom five again, like, when does success start to actually happen? So I'm saying get out of the bottom 10, show improvement. I see Tkachuk, Shabbat, Norris, Stützle, Batherson. I see all of them taking a huge step forward next year and propelling the team to actually being out of the bottom 10 and being close to the playoffs. Not in the playoffs, but like a bubble team.
I could see that, yeah. And I think that would be a massive step for them to at least, you know, you're in January, February, and you're still, like, in the playoff race. Like, you're not in a playoff spot necessarily, but you're close. And I totally agree. Like, they have those pieces. They have Tkachuk, Shabbat, Stützle, Norris, Batherson. They have these guys. They just desperately need, you know, some goaltending, couple other strong defenders. And I think what's really cool about this offseason is that Dorion has a really big opportunity to add to this group. But I think he has to be really proactive with it. And I think like an obvious move for them is to, you know, target teams that aren't able to protect their fourth defenseman in the draft. You know, I'm looking at a team like Colorado who, you know, they have Gerard, Makar, Johnson has a no move clause, and then they have Devon Taves. So, you know, if they can't protect one of those guys, like probably Taves, you know, try to trade for him, right? So they don't lose him for nothing. I think Doran would be super, he would look super smart for doing that because, you know, there's no one else really worth protecting on Ottawa besides Shabbat and I guess Mike Riley maybe. But yeah, like I think they have the potential to really make that push, as you're saying. But I want you to finish this sentence for me, Brennan. So the Senators rebuild will be on track if blank, but it will be derailed if blank.
Is this like there's only one answer to this? Or is
No. I just want, like, what do you think?
Okay, so it'll be on track if, you know what, I think it'll be on track if they stay where, like, stay on the current path. I think they are on track. I think they should go out and acquire another top four defenseman, but they have a lot of pieces in their system already. You know, like, I think their rebuild will stay on track if they stick with it. Stick with what you've got. You've got so many prospects now and talented prospects, and potentially add one or two more impact players and probably a defenseman. I think it'll be derailed. I have confidence in the rebuild, but I think it'll be derailed if, you know what, if deployment isn't correct. I think deployment has been a huge issue for us this year. Like, there's been a lot of questioning DJ Smith's choices specifically. I think, like in my mind, Shabbat cannot continue to play over 30 minutes a game. I think stuff like that will, like, over time take a toll on people and will derail their development to an extent. So I think you need to figure out if Stutzle is a center or a winger in the coming years. I think, like, failed decisions can lead to the derailment of this. So you have so many prospects that it's hard to think they won't at least be a competitive team in the future. But think, like, they might not be a contender, right? If they don't make the right decisions, if they don't deploy players right, if they don't decide, like, if they get rid of players like Abramov, who maybe turn into a middle six guy, right? Like, I don't know. I think they need to make the right decisions and deploy players correctly, or it's going to be derailed. But I have faith.
I applaud you for answering that without mentioning Eugene or Melnick or anything about money. But no, honestly, I like it.
Honestly, I've completely, like, for everything now, I tried to not look at Eugene Melnick.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, in my head, like, there's been so much talk about him for the last, like, ever, and there should be. But now I just completely forget about him because I'm like, if I'm going to find happiness with this team, I need to forget about Eugene Melnick. So you're right, though. Yeah, for derailment, you could say maybe he doesn't sign like Tkachuk or something. I just, like, that would obviously screw everything up.
Right. And
the entire fan base would leave. But I don't know. I have wishful thinking with Eugene.
For sure. And yeah, like, I'm not going to, like, if I truly thought, you know, he was never going to spend it all or that. And I mean, honestly, most of my hope lies in the fact that he'll sell eventually. But yeah, like, I'm not going to bring it up every single time because it gets so tiresome if you know, if someone's talking about, oh, Brady's just going to want to leave. Like, no, I doubt he does. Like, yeah. I'm not worried about, like, re-signing guys off their entry-level contracts because that was never a problem. It was always the next contract. So yeah, like, I'm certainly not worried about that at all yet, but you know, we still got a few years to enjoy these young guys coming up and stuff like that. But yeah, it'll be fascinating.
Sorry, that's why it's good to have Shabbat on the 8-year deal too.
Yeah,
where that's why that was so exciting because it's like that's 8 years of a true quality top defenseman. So that was promising. So hopefully you can get. I don't think Brady's going to sign long term, but hopefully you can get him for like 3 or 4 years. Hopefully you can get Bathurst into like a 7-year deal. Like, I don't know, they could make the proper moves there, and it would be super promising. Like, that Shabbat deal was really good. I applaud him for that, at least.
Yeah, well, and you can, I mean, honestly, it's perfect. I think it takes him right to age 30, which is like perfect. Like, you don't, I don't know, I mean, we see with a guy like Carlson, like, he's after 30, he's kind of, I mean, he's still not god awful. Like, he's, you know, last night he had a fantastic game. Yeah. And he still has some skill, but you know, some of these guys really drop off after that. So I think that was kind of a perfect contract for him. But last question here for you, Brennan. Which prospect currently unestablished on the roster, so like that would include Branstrom and Formanton as well, are you most excited about in the future?
Oof, it's a long list. I'm writing my my top 25 prospects article right now, so I might honestly have to stick with Brännström. Ooh, but Pinto. No, I might have to stick with Brännström. I think he's better than average. Like it's kind of a split argument. A lot of people think he's just an average, like second pairing guy. I don't think he's going to be like an all-star necessarily, but I think he's going to bring a lot to our team. Like I think he's going to play a big role. And no, his defensive game will never be stellar. That's not his game though. He's like 5'10" and he's 21 years old right now. So I think the way he carries the puck and the zone entries, and you see it in Belleville, like the zone entries are crazy and the power play effectiveness. And I think that's going to be so important to our team. So I'm really excited about him and Jake Sanderson too. Jake Sanderson really excites me all of a sudden. So
definitely, definitely. I mean, those two.
Who are you most?
Yeah. I mean, Brännström certainly up there. I haven't really given much thought. I guess I honestly, I can't believe I'm saying this, but probably Sanderson, just because I think he's going to add so much stability to the back end. The fact that he can kind of do it all, jack of all trades, I think that's going to be, and don't get me wrong, I think Brännström will be very important for that as well, but I think Sanderson will add something that they desperately need and they really haven't had since kind of like Chris Phillips, I guess. But I think he'll be even better than Phillips. It's going to be a lot of fun, hopefully, for, you know, the next few years with these guys coming up.
Those two on a pairing, too. Imagine that. Sanderson, Brännström. Brännström plays right.
There you go. I mean, Sanderson was playing on the right in North Dakota, too. So who knows?
That would be a wicked pairing. I hope to
exactly.
see that. Exactly.
Yeah. Should be a lot of fun. All right. Well, that should do it for today. But before we go, anything you'd like to plug, Brennan?
You know, I'll plug the website a little bit. I started this up as sort of like a boost to what I'm already doing, and I write articles consistently on there, and it's been a lot of fun. There's a good foundation on it right now, a lot of members, a lot of the forum's super active and stuff, so it's been a fun, different kind of experience where I'm expanding into journalism a little bit more, and I hope to see more people come as time goes, but it's been good so far. So
nice, yeah. And where can people find you on Twitter?
At Everyday Sense.
Everyday Sense.
That's it.
All right, so definitely go check those out if you haven't already. And thanks for coming on, Brennan. It's always fun to bring on a new guest.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a ton of fun.
Of course. As I wrap it up, reminder that you can find the Cost Per Point cast on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Stitcher. And if you really enjoy it, you can rate and review the podcast on those platforms as well. You can follow me on Twitter at ShaqTS, read my articles at Silver7Sends, and also follow my YouTube channel called The Hockey Shaq. If you want to submit a listener question for an upcoming episode, send me a message at CPPointcast on Twitter, where you'll get any updates about the show. Thanks for listening. Adios.